This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Two straight wins for the Sabres. They had a good stretch going to the Four Nations break. And they rallied to beat Anaheim last night, 3-2. And Paul Hamilton joins us. His appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Good morning, Paul.
Morning. Second time in this year they did that. Got behind 2-0 against the Ducks and beat them 3-2.
Okay, that happened in Anaheim, right, okay. Too, huh?
Anaheim, yeah. It was Kulik scoring the overtime winner in that one.
That's
but
right.
They had gotten behind 2-0 in that game also.
Well, they got behind 2-0, Paul, and ultimately win the game. They were not playing poorly, though, to get to that 2-0 deficit. I mean, there's a couple power play goals, but even strength, I mean, it felt like the Sabres were maybe getting goal lead on both ends of the ice.
Goal lead more maybe in the third period. The first period, they hit three posts. They missed the net. They were 10:55 into the game. They had missed the net 9 times. And by the time the period was over, they missed the net 12 times. I mean, they were absolutely just all over them. Once they got through that 5-on-3, and I don't know what the referee saw on Dahlin on a penalty there. I didn't see anything even close to a penalty, which made it a 5-on-3. And they score on that, and then the Sabres just hit high gear after that. You look up, all of a sudden the shots were 7-2 Buffalo. They were just skating. They were playing like they did Saturday. They were just all over them, and they just couldn't get the puck into the net. And there were some good saves there too, but you know, they were almost their own worst enemy, missing the net as much as they did and hitting the post 3 times. Then they get to the second period, and Lindy Ruff said they thought it was going to be easy. And, you know, you think about it, they played like that. They just did not have a good second period at all, and that's when it became 2-0. Mm-hmm. And then they got to the third period, which might have even been better than the first period. I mean, they had 18 shots, and just again, Lindy Ruff decided to go back to the lines he had a while back. And right away, I mean, Tuck goes around the left wing. He's out there with Thompson and Greenway and finds Thompson streaking down the center of the ice. That was a great save. And then the Cousins line comes on with Peterka and Quinn. They score the first shift there on the ice. And they go from there. Cousins, you know, winds up with 3 assists in the period. He had 7 hits. I mean, it was just, you know, it reminded you of a couple of years ago the way he played.
Man, there was a shift, Paul, in that third. I don't even know if they scored on it. Maybe it was right before the second goal, the Tuck goal. Dahlin's out there. Byram's out there. I think maybe it was the Cousins line. Like, the Ducks just could not. It looked like the Globetrotters for at least a couple of minutes there in the third period.
Byram especially. I mean, he had come in from the right point, cut through the circle, got himself open in front. That was a good save. And less than, I'd say, 20 seconds later, he came in from the left side, and he missed the net on that one. And, you know, it was just relentless pressure.
Yeah, that defense pairing, by the way, like when you're watching them at top gear, like I can't remember the last time the Sabres have had a defense pair where they can have two defensemen when they're both playing well like that. Just you can't take the puck from them, and they're going to get chances, create chances even on their own.
Yeah, and they were able. It's not easy, and it doesn't get done very much to get a hockey trade at the trade deadline, and Adams did that last year. I think it was a day or two before the trade deadline, and he winds up with a hockey trade, which it turns out to be a very good trade for the Buffalo Sabres, and right now not a very good trade for Colorado. You know, Colorado has not been happy with Mittelstadt this year, and except for that he had a hot start, but since then it's just not gone well at all. And
there's trade rumors, I think, about Mittelstadt now, yeah, going into the deadline.
And well, the trade rumors are about Byram too, but I think the Sabres would rather they sign him, and you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Paul, on Byram, signing him, I mean, they would have reason to be gun-shy here, and you almost might wonder if they would take a chance. All right, fine, we'll bring him back on a one-year RFA deal, try to get good, be in the playoffs, and maybe that's going to be what convinces him next year at this time or something like that, because it is it's not exactly an easy kind of line to walk here if you're Kevin Adams or the Sabres on what to do in terms of how much he wants, what kind of, I guess, what kind of commitments you've already made. I was saying to Joe earlier, I feel like if you're going to lock into Byram and maybe also want to extend Greenway and Zucker, then you got to get rid of some other guys because they already have a lot of guys under contract, and you know, you want to have some room to move around.
Yeah, but I mean, the NHL put out some figures. I mean, the salary cap could be over $100 million in 3 years, you know, which you know would help the Sabres out a little bit with that. So if they indeed don't have a self-imposed budget by Terry Pegula, which Adam says they don't, there are a lot of people who feel they do. But, you know, the cap is going up significantly, which means revenues have been very good for the league. And, you know, that would help significantly in that area if they wanted to do that. And, you know, I did ask Byram about it a little less than a month ago, probably, and, you know, he was very noncommittal. He just said, look, you know, it's not really something I'm thinking about now. It's not something that I've even talked with my family about. So he said, you know, when the time is right, he'll sit down with his agent and his family and decide what they want to do one way or the other. He has said that he does like it here, but, you know, he didn't say he wants to sign. He didn't say he didn't. He just said it really hasn't been talked about, and he really hasn't given it much thought yet because he hasn't had to. And, you know, when the time's right, he'll sit down with his agent and his family and discuss it.
Paul, the line combinations kind of coming together and working in the third period last night, did some of that have to do with Kulik also being, was it injured or what would you even call it? Like, but he was wearing that mask, I know, and didn't see a ton of ice time.
He got a puck in the face. He was wide open. It was kind of unfortunate that Dostal got his stick on the puck and launched it. The puck was coming across, and he was wide open. I mean, Thompson had just gone in on a breakaway, but he couldn't quite pull away, so he couldn't quite get the shot off. Dostal knocked it off his stick, and then he kept going with it, and he went to the corner, got the puck, had Kulik wide open off the side of the net, got the pass across, and it hit Dostal's stick and went up, and the puck hit him right in the mouth. So that he, you know, got some repairs for that, came back, had a full shield on, and Lindy Ruff said he was having trouble breathing. So he pulled his ice time way back after that. So that was part of it. He did play. I mean, it didn't like he didn't leave the game again, but Lindy thought, you know, he's hurting, he can't breathe. You know, let's kind of switch the lines around a little bit. And what he did is went back to what they used to be. You know, Thompson centering Tuck, and sometimes they had Greenway, and Cousins centering Paterka and Quinn. That was a line for a long, long time. And you could tell, I mean, by going back to that, there was familiarity right off the bat. You know, they knew what they were doing, and you saw chemistry right off the bat because these are lines that have played many times together before.
Paul Hamilton with us on the Western Hotline. So Carolina is next, and then it's a couple of teams that are a little further down the standings, Montreal and then San Jose. Do you the first two games out of this break, I mean, if anyone was wondering, like, okay, can they even put a run together to make it interesting, especially before the trade deadline, let alone the season, not just getting the result, but they've played like they could go on a little bit of a run here.
Well, I'm kind of following the Lindy Ruff formula that he has laid down for his team of five-game segments. So they're 2-0 in this five-game segment. He wants 7 out of 10 points every five games, which is 3-1-1. Right now they're 2-0 in this five-game segment, with games coming up against Carolina and two against Montreal. And that will end the five-game segment. So in order to accomplish what he wants, they need to go 1-1-1 in those games to go forward. And I think what helped when he laid that down is they already had a five-game segment going into the break of 4-1. So he could use that as an example. It's like, all right, you've already done it. I mean, and if we're going to do it, this is what we're going to have to do. One thing was cut 0.4 to 0.5 off the goals against in two games. That's happened. They've given up two goals in both games. So, you know, they've been able to do that. They have not improved their special teams, which they need to do. I mean, the Ducks did come in with the worst power play in the NHL. Now, that 5-on-3, I just don't think should have been a 5-on-3. I just don't know what the referee saw on the second penalty to Dahlin. I did not see a penalty anywhere there in the replay. And that gives you a 107 two-man advantage because they call that phantom penalty. Greenway, yeah. I understand that, you know, it's a bad penalty. Greenway comes charging in and knocks. I don't have a huge problem with it, if you want to be totally honest, because he came charging in and was trying to be tough in front of the net. And, you know, they had guys at the net, and they were being tough in that game. It was, you know, a game that looked like against a rival team. But they were always up for the scrums, and they were always in there as a group of five. And, you know, they wind up getting in a couple of fights, and, you know, Matias Samuelsson got the message loud and clear. I mean, he was involved in at least two or three scrums where, you know, he was involved, not just standing there pushing. He was involved. And they were and look at what they've done for five of the last six periods. They've been around the net almost the whole time, no perimeter play, and being tough around the net and being tough in battles. I mean, it's. I know they're 7-3 in their last 10. I know we talked about it before. Since the 13-game winless streak, they've played very well in those 22 games. Now a points percentage of over 600 with this win. And I get all that. But now they're doing it with fast physical play, which is something that we hadn't seen. Cousins, 7 hits. Greenway, 6 hits. And I don't really even care if they're hits. I want to see physical battles. That's what I want to see, and that's what we are seeing. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're putting somebody through the back wall. That means you're in the battle, and you're physical in that battle, using your strength, using your body to win puck battles, and they're doing that the last couple of games.
Paul, we are 9 days from the NHL trade deadline, a week from Friday, and you know, in years past, we might wonder if this kind of play, this streak or run or whatever you want to call it, could convince them to be buyers. And I don't really think Kevin Adams should be swayed one way or the other. I don't know what there is to sell. I don't know what, you know, picks, prospects. It's just, it's a currency I'm not really all that interested in right now. So if it's a hockey trade, I'll listen to it. Past that, I don't think that the GM should be worried about the standings and should be worried about, you know, what can I get seconds and thirds and fifths and buyers and sellers and, you know, these kind of binary conversations. You feel like that's the right place for Adams to be?
Absolutely, especially in the cases of Greenway and Zucker. You're looking for veteran leadership, and people have been talking about trading Tuck, And I don't understand why you would want to do that, because he's the type of player you're actually looking to add to get more of that type of player. They don't have enough veteran leadership in their top six to help the youngsters that they have. It's too much towards the youngsters. And you're looking for basically a guy like Alex Tuch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you need more than just Alex. You need somebody to help Alex Tuch in that leadership role. Not trade away Alex Tuch, so now you got to go find two of them.
But the reality is, if you get rid of Alex Tuch, the Sabres can't exactly find 29-year-old top-line wingers that will just sign here for $5 million. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
And it's going to score you 20 to 30 goals and is a good two-way player, one of the best players you're going to see at, causing turnovers, swiping the puck, coming up, and then turning that into offense right away when he does that. Zucker and Greenway. Greenway has a skill set that nobody else on this team has, and has had two very good games since coming back from injury. And again, I'm more interested in finding a way to re-sign him as an unrestricted free agent coming up than I am in trading him. And even if you haven't re-signed him yet, I would still keep him unless he has said absolutely bluntly, those two players, we are not re-signing. There is no way you're going to re-sign us. All right, if you want to trade him, trade him. But I would keep, even though they have not signed contracts at the deadline, I would still keep them and continue negotiating with them.
Would that change for you if someone offered a first-round pick for him?
For Greenway?
No, for Zucker. Like, if you didn't know for sure he wasn't going to sign yet, but somebody... Because there have been some of these... I remember Barclay Goodrow, like, 2 years ago. Like, there have been some players at the deadline recently that have gone for a first where you're like, oh, wow, like, a first-round pick. So, if you didn't know for sure one way or another what Zucker was going to do, but someone offered you that, does that change it for you at all?
I don't think so in this case. It would any other year I've probably been talking about, because I've always said, get what you can get. If you're Reinhart and Eichel both said they want, Eichel wanted out, and Reinhart said, I'm not re-signing. Now, Eichel had a contract, but at least he did them the favor of saying, I'll play the one more year that I owe you, and I'm not re-signing. And that's simple as that. I mean, he felt disrespected by the Buffalo Sabres organization because they had never offered him and three different GMs a long-term contract. He felt he earned it, and he's not wrong. He had earned it. He was a very good player here and should have been offered one and never was. So I get it. I understand why he felt that way. In all those cases, I thought, get the draft pick. But as Jeremy already pointed out, I think it's different now. They have so many young players, good young players, but they don't have enough roster spots to play them all. They can't all make the Buffalo Sabres. They got too many of them. So I don't really see the need to add to that. I think they need to use some of this as currency to get the types of players that they need. So in this case, and probably it's the first time I've said this, I'd say no, I don't think that would deter me unless he has said absolutely I'm not coming back.
Paul Hamilton on the Westro Hotline. Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
We'll talk again. 10 straight, Paul. Lindy's got his plan, I got mine. 10 straight.
is Rob's plan, by the way, to never come out of that 300 level seat? Because it seemed like he was in heaven last night.
I could not hear him, but I could see it, of course. Yeah. And it was just hilarious. And Martin Baron brings him a hot dog and a Coke. So you got Marty delivering you food. And then we have some very, very nice people who bring food and in the press box and take care of us very well. And they had some chicken and waffles.
They had like special food items.
Right, special food.
They brought him that. They brought him the hot dog. I mean, really, they could just make it Rob's food corner up there.
Well, that was the food we had in the press box. And I said to Crystal, I said, well, because she was laughing. Because she had just realized Rob was up there. I showed her he was up there. And I said, Rob would love some of this food here, So there were like three trays. So she combined one, and then she grabs the tray and she goes, "Oh, we got to give him how much? He would he like how much chicken should we give him?" I said, "You give him the rest of it, and he would eat it. You give him 9 pieces if you want to." I said, "He'll eat anything." So he got some the waffles and the chicken, and I did talk to him later. He said it was excellent. It was very good. So she went up there with the tray and handed him that, and so yeah, it was exactly Rob's food corner. It was
listen. Paul,
guys got to hear it at least. I'm sure it was hilarious.
Well, some people didn't like hearing it. There was a lot of chewing going on. It's okay. It's okay. Listen, the Sabres might have stumbled on their latest package. It's the Rob Ray ticket package. You just go up there and they just keep bringing you food. Yeah. You know? How much can you eat? Let's do it.
Totally into this.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
Ovechkin scored last night.
Yes.
I was just looking at Ovechkin.
One-timer on the power play from his office.
Yeah. Which was his 30th goal of the year.
It's insane.
He has how many 30-goal seasons? How many 30-goal seasons does Alexander Ovechkin have?
Well, I think it's every year of his career. I think it's every year of his career. So does he have 18?
19.
19?
This is number 19.
Do you have it open? Is it every year?
No. It's not every year because he has 20 goal seasons. I was trying to figure out. Yes, there are.
Oh, so there must be one year.
One year where he might have got 29. I'll pull up his career stats.
Probably one of those lockout years, right?
But if you go to the NHL's website, NHL records.
Here you go. I got it. Yeah, he scored 24 goals in 45 games the year that the season was cut off due to COVID.
Which is too bad because that could have been a 60-goal season. If you sort by the tens, Ovechkin has tied for the most 50. He is owner of the most 40, owner of the most 30. He does not have the most 20-goal seasons, and this might be a fun bet. Would this season now count? It must count right now, is it?
Yeah.
It's got to be active. Yeah, okay. So
yeah, it must be. Yeah. Assuming it's updated from last night.
He has 20-goal seasons in 20 seasons. And the record is Gordie Howe, who has 22 20-goal seasons in 26 seasons. Ovechkin is now 12 away from breaking the record, 11 away from tying Gretzky.
Yeah.
Once we get in single digits, we're on a watch every night.
I think I saw, too, that he is one of two players now at 39 or older to score 30 goals. And yeah, Howe is the other one.
Okay.
Howe scored 39 at... Oh, I know what it is. In your age 39 season, this is what it is. Most goals in your age 39 season. Gordie Howe, most all-time, 39. Alex Ovechkin, second all-time, 30. And he's on pace to blow by that. He broke his leg, or broke his fibula.
This year.
2.5 months ago.
Yeah.
And he's on a 50-goal pace, 60-goal pace. He's not even like this, you know, new age, the athlete playing longer than ever before because of sports science and taking care of your body. Tom Brady doesn't eat strawberries. LeBron spends $1 million a year on his body. There's the NBA documentary. The things LeBron does stay in shape are just insane. Ovechkin's just like, he just shows up, right?
He does.
He's aged.
He does look,
not age like a fine wine. I mean, he has with his game, but like
he looks older than those other guys.
He definitely looks older than those other
guys.
But
he can play. He can still play.
Isn't hockey too the sport where you don't have to go crazy, right?
I don't know.
I mean, Jagr played till 50.
The Great Chase. There's a logo and everything. NHL.com, and they're also putting it up on the broadcast, like a little logo in the corner when he scores, the Great Chase, and the counter goes down from 12 goals to go.
The sports books now, you can bet on which game he's going to break the record in. Let me see if the Sabres are up for that, because they play in 14 games now, 14 Capitals games away.
Yeah.
And he scored. So if he scores at a goal per game, like he's going to put himself right on track.
That game is in Washington, right?
And that game is in Washington. Yeah. It's surrounded by 4 road games, so like they'd want it there.
Yeah,
they'd love to have it there.
803-0550. Sabres win 2 in a row. Good for them. A lot of work still to do. They'll play Carolina on Thursday. When we return, the Shakir contract. A little more on that. You know what it all means for the offense and what the next step should be for the Bills. What do you want next? I think Shakir is a very popular extension. What do you want next? 803-0550, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Far circle, Quinn gets it back again. Shot's not there. Yoki Haru scored from here in the tournament. Scores! He did it again! Henry Yoki Haru!
One of the moments of the game brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. Jeremy and Joe, we're going streaking. Two in a row. Wait, you know what we need?
It is 6 of 7.
Sure.
That's good. That's streaking, right?
I only speak in terms of streaks with the Sabres. If they lose on Thursday, reset the counter and get 10 in a row. I will not treat the season as over until they can't win 10 in a row.
Does this whole exercise only work because they lost to Nashville and the last game before the break?
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't be talking about them winning 10 in a row if they had right now been on a 7-game win streak.
No, they were not within.
Because then we'd be talking about, oh, guys, they need to go on they need to make this streak 50. 16 games.
That's right.
And that almost suddenly makes it sound more impossible.
I mean, 10 in a row is pretty ridiculous anyway, but
that's right.
They played their way back into 10 in a row range. So,
stupid,
yeah. And listen,
13-game losing streak.
If they play well enough for a couple of weeks, you know, talk to me, Joe, about 3 weeks from now. Maybe it's Operation 6 in a row. Maybe they have to win the last 6 of whatever. We're going to do it the best we can. 803-0550. Jeremy and Joe, good Wednesday morning. Have a question for you about the Bills. And if you want to try on decoding James Cook's Instagram, I'm doing some work on that. James Cook posted on his Instagram a picture of him signaling a first down against the Chiefs. And in it, he's got two emojis.
Yep.
An hourglass emoji and the devil face emoji. Now, digging deep into this, there are two hourglass emojis. One has the sand at the top. One has the sand at the bottom. Sand at the bottom means this is over, right?
Right. Yep.
Sand at the top means time's ticking. Yep. Now, the devil face, one devil face is happy, one devil face is mad. He's got the happy one.
Yep.
So I'm taking this cryptic tweet from James Cook to mean that there's time left and it's not contentious. There you go. You can report that. Tweet that out, breaking sports news, if you want. Do we do that anymore? No? All right.
Emoji decoder.
Emoji decoder.
It should be in your title from now on.
I'll take it.
Emoji decoder.
803-0550. What do you want to happen next? Let's get to that. What do you want to happen next? Shakir gets his deal, 4 years, solid deal for him.
Yep.
Cook, Bernard, Benford, Rousseau, all on the list here.
I think doesn't it have to be Benford? No,
I think.
Well, you think it could be Bernard?
I think it's most likely to be Bernard. He's the likely cheapest, and they would never use a franchise tag on him, so they will be motivated to get that done. So I think Bernard is next, but we'll see. Get some calls in. CJ in Buffalo. Hey, CJ. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Now, some of the stuff I'm about to say, just walk with me here. So, I would trade James Cook. I wouldn't go to the end or do anything like we did with Gabe Davis. I think he wants a contract this year. Otherwise, I do think he will cause a problem so social media wise in the off season if he doesn't get paid. But with all of our resources, I would say the Bills need speed on offense and speed on defense. And with the offense that we run with Joe Brady, I haven't seen screens since Chan Gailey, just going off memory. So I would definitely say, look, speed opens up for Kincaid. With the offensive line that you have, I'm not worried about the worthy pick. I know Sean McDermott said he wants size with speed, but I think speed in general opens up for everybody, just like the presence of Amari Cooper opened it up for the offense. Speed keeps the safety back. You have to respect Josh Allen's arm and somebody's speed. I don't care if you only run a 9 route. I think that on offense and defense helps this team a lot. If you want to allocate most of your resources to defense and say, look, let's just add some speed on offense just to open up the playbook a little more. Let's make people worry about that one threat, but it gives everybody else a little more breathing room, like the short screen Shakir, because you have some speed on the outside. That's all I'm saying. I would just put more than one resource there. I know MVS didn't work out, but I would even take draft picks. Just let's get two fast guys. After that, hopefully they grow into something great, but if they don't, they work in this offense, especially with this offensive line. That's all.
Yeah, thanks, CJ. One of the things I'm picturing visually, what if you want a good speed receiver, vertical speed receiver, I mean, granted, the best of the best do this anyway, but you're looking for someone that when he lines up out wide, the corner is 12 yards back.
Yep.
So, okay, I got to be ready for this because he'll run right by me. Think about Elam on Worthy in the AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Was he backed off?
He was backed off.
15 yards?
It was insane how far back
right.
he was.
The speed is such a threat that everything is open to you to cut that short, to do whatever. So someone like that, the Bills do talk a good game, like wanting someone like that.
Yes and no.
Bean said yesterday, I'll never turn that down. Like I said, they talk a good game.
What Bean yesterday, when asked about speed, I have a different takeaway. I came away from Bean's comment yesterday thinking they will never invest in speed. They will never invest in speed because he is so, at least this is how he talks, and the action mostly backs that up. He is so aggressive when he talks about that you've got to be a good football player first. And, like, that's not crazy to say, right? That I just don't want speed to get speed. It guy's got to be a good football player. He reiterates that every time he's asked about it. That does seem to be how they act. Other teams don't act like that. Not everybody does act like that. There are teams in the league, a lot of them, I think. There's at least a chunk that will draft speed just to draft speed and think, oh, I can make that guy into a good football player. And the Bills kind of carry themselves that way. And they'd have to change their attitude on that. Because even last year with Worthy, like, okay, you might have wanted him.
And
you told him. But why didn't you take him? Because there was another team that believed in the speed more.
Yeah.
And you might have thought, well, you might have been thinking about the football player before you were thinking about what I can turn that speed into.
Right. On One Bills Live yesterday, they asked Brandon Bean, hey, do you have a guy you're hoping runs slow again? Because the famous story from the combine is they watched Gabe Davis run slow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's something revealing in there about Bean hoping the combine lies to people and lies to his colleagues. But to go there and hope guys run slow is a little bit counterintuitive to wanting the fastest guys. But that said, you know, everything you just laid out, I don't think it's wrong. But they invest their time and their resources on scouting speed, and then they just back away from it. They liked Worthy. He came in for a visit. He said he thought the Bills were going to take him, and then he and Joe Brady hit it off, and that's all good. The other guys they brought in for their 30 visits, I remember I had the list up yesterday, it's Devontae Walker, Troy Franklin. They've looked at it. They've gone to the speed lot and never walked off with a speed vehicle.
But if you like the speed, but there are 7 other teams, 12 other teams that love it and are obsessed with it, then how often are you going to get it? What, like, you can want it, but if consistently there are other teams that want it more because maybe they don't have the same qualifier that you do. Maybe if the Bills' attitude is, we'd love to have speed, but our qualifier is the guy has got to be a good football player all around. And that there are other teams that say, I don't need him to be a good all-around football player. Give me the speed and let me work with it. Then guess what's going
to
happen? You're never going to end up with the speed.
Right.
You're never going to get there.
Is Worthy, and Worthy might be like too, we're all too close to the situation because of the trade in the Chiefs, but is Worthy a football player? Or is he just a fast guy? And do the Chiefs care?
And is he the only example of that? Because really, Diggs was not slow, and John Brown is like 7 years ago now.
No, I'm thinking about guys like Tank Dell. What's Tank Dell? He's a football player. He's fast and not that big, but he's a football player, okay? Some guys get that. If you're 150 pounds, you can't be a football player because, what's Worthy, like 170?
He's not much bigger.
The Bills want Tutu Atwell here?
I guess I'll believe it when I see it that they draft a guy based on the pure breakaway speed, and there are some deficiencies otherwise. That there are holes in the game, there is a size problem, or there is a technique problem, or whatever it is, that they'll just go and draft speed and try to mold that into a player, rather than It feels more often, especially receiver and maybe running back to a lesser extent, this is true. But just as a team overall, they're not, they've never really been that fast of a team.
That's right.
Like, their whole team is kind of built with the idea that, okay, well, you got to be a good football player first. So therefore, you kind of build your team not being as fast as everybody else, because you might have a qualifier that half the league doesn't.
803-0550. We'll get a break in, Silas. We'll take your call on the other side, get a little more time to talk about it with you. And Sal coming up at 8 o'clock from Indianapolis on the Shakir extension and his continued State of the Bills series at our website, WGR550.com. All right, we're checking in with Sal Capaccio in a moment from... Oh my God, the commercials, I got to turn my computer down. From Indianapolis, we're going to call in. Joe's got the Sabres strategy segment coming up as well. But first, Silas in New Jersey is up here on a warm Wednesday. It's kind of warm out here in Buffalo, right? Like 40s again. Silas, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. This is my second time calling, and I enjoy what you guys do. How's everybody this morning?
Thank you.
I got to disagree a little bit with the Shakir deal. I think you're looking at it from a standpoint of $15 million. If he earns everything in that contract to make 15 every year, then he's having a great year. The offense is having a great year. At that point, then it's we're talking about he's close to 1,000 yards, you know, 5 or 6 touchdowns in what we consider the Buffalo Bills to now be at least a balanced offense between the running and pass. But I like the actual bones. Like, it's an $8 million a year deal. I think Shakir's a top 5 slot in the NFL. I don't think you can name 5 slot receivers in the NFL that are better than Shakir is. And if you get a guy like that for $8 million on his second contract, that is a bargain. That is a bargain. I think Bean did an excellent job.
Yeah, thanks, Sal. So we got to wait to see like the full numbers of it. He's definitely making more than 8, though. I mean, it's 32 yeah. guaranteed on a 4-year deal, an average annual of 15. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. he'll get some of the non guaranteed,
right? And
it would unless he was horrible, like from the right. start to the finish, then maybe he would only get the guaranteed.
So here's one thing to do about contracts. Like, we all know, you got to see the numbers.
Yeah,
so I think Sal Smith and you in the YouTube chat. Somebody in the YouTube chat compared him to the Amon-Ra St. Brown deal, who you've pointed out, Joe. He does play on the outside quite a bit.
Yeah,
he's all over the place. He's not an exclusive slot. He might be one of the best slots. So St. Brown signed 4 years, 120. Wow, $30 million a year.
Yep.
Yeah, 77 guaranteed. Oh, okay, so less than $20 million per year if you do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing it that way, well, Shakir signed for 15. Like Amon-Ra St. Brown signed for 30,
mm-hmm.
or Shakir signed for, as Silas says, 8, where St. Brown signed for 20. Like, the structure of these deals, the outs, the guaranteed money, there's still a lot to figure out. I just think the Shakir deal is probably good to find. I don't know about a steal. I don't know about that. For all the points everybody just made about how they could win without Diggs because they let him walk. I mean, if they had let Shakir walk and signed another slot receiver or drafted another slot receiver, there's no guarantee he would be as good or as productive as that guy. But, you know, they walked away from a receiver that had a ton more gravity to him, and they were okay in the short term. And I don't want to treat Khalil Shakir like they would have died without him. I think it's a very good deal. I think he's a very good player, and he's paid what he's worth. Yeah. I don't think it's a steal. I don't think it's some sort of holy cow they got over on the league here. But they did, to that point, though, one thing they did do is they signed him before the next round of receiver contracts.
Yes,
When Jamar Chase goes for 40
yeah.
and Higgins goes for 31, and
there will be guys that...
Is McLaurin up?
You know, this is how it works. There will be receivers that sign... I think this is true. The list is a little interesting this year, but won't there be a receiver that signs this spring for more than Shakir? And every Bills fans on Twitter is going to go, "Oh, whoa, that guy's not. Well, that's an overpayment. That guy's not as good as Shakir." I don't know who that guy would be, though.
I don't know.
Because again, like, there's no middle tier of free agency this year, really. There's also Higgins, and then there's like old guys, and then there's a drop.
There's also a point to be made here about the everybody eats concept. If everybody eats, then everybody gets paid in the middle. And do you save money versus paying one guy 30 and three other guys a combined 10 versus paying three guys 15? You know, the everybody eats idea and not forcing the ball, finger quotes, to one player will kind of ensure that you're balanced in the way you pay. And I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the best. But whatever, Shakir's here, he's locked in. I don't know anybody that's really upset about the deal, and I can't think of why you would be. I think it's a fine deal. I just don't think it's some sort of, you know, crazy steal is all. 803-0550 to join us. 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe. Sal joins us. We'll get his thoughts on the Shakir extension, what Brandon Bean had to say about it all, what might be the next one to come along, whether that's James Cook or Terrell Bernard or Myles Garrett stuff. The Browns GM spoke on Myles Garrett yesterday and tried to put out every fire there was there. So full update from the Combine with Sal when we return on WGR.